That was just some thoughts. I don't know.
Hmm.
So anyway, you gonna do the opening, Alex?
We don't have an opening. It's a cold opening. What are you talking about?
Theme music playing. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Welcome to the Dress and Files podcast.
We haven't had theme music in like 5 years. Did you just wake up longer from a coma? Like,
what do you mean?
We had it on the first episode and then never again.
Really? I remember having to sit through that for a while. Like,
well, there was more of a sense of introduction, like, but the music went away real quick.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But, so we're going to cobble together some ideas about vampires that we're going to try to talk about. They have some weird things going on in general. You guys are great help right now.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I just gave you like tons of stuff to open up with.
You could have started repeating it, like, because you were saying it a minute till we go live. My God.
That's because you direct. So I was like, I give you the big brain ideas and then you direct it.
Okay, so I'm
not sure focusing how that works,
on
but...
the three camps of vampires that we have actually seen and are familiar with, we're going to ignore the Jade and anything else and other than the black, white, and red.
Very secretive.
Mm-hmm.
Kiro says and that. I just read that.
So you had a point of, like, how did all of these three come into a coalition of allyship? They are vampires, but they're all very different vampires.
They are essentially different creatures, right? I mean, sure, two of them drink blood, but beyond that, they are nothing alike.
Well, demonic, so... You know, but yeah, it's those three.
Drink blood and transformed from mortals. And White Court is way different. Born like that, though they cannot become it. And you know, they never died. They're not transformed. They are also, while predatory and long lived, they are the most human, right, of the courts for sure.
I think what it comes down to is, like, he calls them vampires and broke them up into courts because he's stealing vampire tropes from other people. Sorry, stealing's a strong word, but I think we all know what I mean. You know,
he like, said this much, right? Black Court is like classic Bram Stoker vampires, and they the dawn of the
From Dusk Till Dawn.
Dusk Till Dawn is Red Court. Mm-hmm. And White Court is Anne Rice vampires without the blood drinking.
Right.
And so I like Twilight because I was too young to think Anne Rice, but
that's the reason, right? You know, because like White Court vampires are more appropriately succubi, you know, which they're still not, but they're more kinship there in my opinion than vampire, other kinds of vampires. Right. So there isn't a family tree. There isn't a scientific reason why they should all be called vampires. And, you know, we can't go back to a common ancestry or anything like that. They're not like breeds of dogs. Right. Where like dogs, you can trace back their lineage and they're all, you know, wolves at some point or something like that. There's nothing like that with vampires. They're just used. They're called that because that's what the readers would know them as colloquially, you know. So so that's tough, but thanks for, maybe I'll lose sleep on that tonight. So
so he's vaguely described the creation of the Black Court with Vlad Tepes and the creature, what was his name,
Dracul?
Well, no, it's just, I he had a title. was it called the creature, whatever.
I think people who know call him the creature, but yeah,
okay.
Like, I don't think that's his title.
All right. So yeah, so Tepes, Dracul, and all that.
Mr. Lagoon was his father. Sorry, had to. You know. I'm sorry.
It's fine.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
So we don't even really, like I brought up, we don't even really know what is he exactly, because from like if we presume it to be true from one starborn to another. When he says that, Starborns, do they have to be mortal?
Why would we assume that? I mean, like, it's, we have a natural assumption because of Harry, but we...
I have the assumption because it seems to me that Starborns are influencing the world. Therefore, they have to be mortal because they have their free will.
Right. So what Ebenezer said in Peace Talks is that there was an alignment in the stars, and anyone born at a certain time on that day was a starborn. That does not necessitate it being immortal. Because
they're born. There's nothing to say that like a Bigfoot couldn't have been born under it.
Or a changeling.
But he's mortal. The changelings are mortal.
But if changeling became a fey, I believe that it would still be a starborn.
And I think that's a really interesting question. But we don't have any examples. And like the fact that they're born kind of implies, you know, and I think just because you pick a side as a fey, there's two different versions of mortal we're talking about here, right? Mortal is often equated with human. Mm-hmm. And then there's mortal as in you can freaking die, you know, and just because you're a fae and you've picked a side doesn't mean you can't die because Meryl died. So
fae can die. The queens are the parts where they might be immortal, and they are not immortal 100% of the time.
No, but just their mantle is. Like, you think that Anya went through all that trouble to kill Mab and she couldn't die? Like, she can die. Well,
squishing her into Mab-colored paste might be enough to then kill her for real on Halloween.
Maybe, but...
You know, injuring
she
her...
She tried real hard. There was a lot of rebar involved, you know, so apparently she's susceptible to the bane. Yeah.
She's a bitch anyway, going there in the height of summer.
But she's ours.
No, Enya. Enya's the real bitch.
I know, but you gotta be
Mab in January. Come on. Fight Mab in January and see who's won.
She knew what she was doing. She wanted all of the Fomor who needed to come out of the lake, and so the lake needed to not be iced over. Mab needed to be at the ebb of her power, at the bottom of it, not at the beginning, or at the height of it, I should say. And you knew what she was doing, more or less, even though she was also an idiot. But this concept of mortal, they need to be born of Earth, it sounds like. They need to be born of this world. Like the way that Leia had said it in Ghost Story, when Harry was able to touch her as he was a ghost, is like she is between worlds. She is of both of them, of the spirit and the real, but she is of reality. And I would bet that the starborn requirements are only applicable to people born of our reality, but not necessarily humans only.
That might be true. I still think there has to be some level of more towards mortal than towards Mab or a high she or something. It's my belief, based on just my understanding of the universe, not exactly... anything clearly this is stated on page this.
We talked about it before though, right? If they're going to be a fulcrum with our current understanding of, you know, how the world works, they're probably going to be immortal. You know, they don't got to be a wizard. They don't, I mean, I don't know if Bigfoot counts, right? That's one of those gray areas because they're children of the divine, right? So technically they wouldn't theoretically count. You know, they're like baby angels, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I really lean towards that it could just be anyone, anything born at that time with some sense of a soul, and a Bigfoot would count because they have souls. That that becomes a weird question about fae, but I think they had to have some form of divine aspect to them, and I think that the fae do in some fashion, and the fact that they are guarding reality. And they were born mortal to changelings. They might have lost a lot of it if they've given over to their mantles or their callings, but I think they had it at least in to start with. Where is it coming from? It was something. hold on. I had a really good point. Now I've lost it. Damn it.
Where indeed?
I think you're going to have a lot more humans just because the amount of reproduction that humans do versus all of these other creatures, the Fae, Bigfoots, anything else, they have much longer lifespans and much slower birth rates. So on the whole numbers of everyone born in those few hours, you're going to have 95% humans.
Does it count if they're born in the Never Never?
That's also
because that seems question. Like to be another exclusionary factor. Not to mention that, like, the part that I'm terrified of is, could you imagine, like, a fae or a dragon or some other kind of immortal born with the ability to choose like that? You know, like, that's why I think it's just generally precluded on based off of like the trajectory we see from the series. Now, I think it's important to say nobody knows because Harry's an idiot. He hasn't asked the right questions yet or just barely started. But, you know, like, so just imagine starborn? What if, you know, being starborn gives you the ability to unzip the universe and then that was granted to a dragon just because he hatched at the right time? Like, that's horrifying, and I don't know if the universe would survive. Like, not enough permutations of that, right? Like, sure, not all dragons are evil, and it doesn't matter if it takes 10,000 years or 10 million years, it only has to happen once.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. But that's probably, I am more leaning to the idea that's why that they kept the idea of what a starborn is and how to make one very secretive, because they don't want people making destroyer dragons.
Okay. But
keep the formula hidden. It'll happen by accident, but that people can try to track them down, make sure that they don't do things, and probably kill them so that they don't accidentally destroy the universe or intentionally destroy the universe. But if people know, here's how you make a superpowered monster with this power to be able to undo all of reality, keep it hidden, as wizards are going to do, to make sure that it's even fewer of them, and it just the ones that happen by accident happen. With Margaret being the one that we can point to as being intentional.
But it does bring me back to the thought of, like, what is Dracul? Was he, like, it's also just, you know, you think about the power level, he created the Black Court as his bully boys, his henchmen. That's at least implied.
He took them over. So
I've got the, I don't know why where I have this. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like it's actually like stated that he created them.
I thought his son created them, and he said, "What a great idea!" And then took them.
Yeah, because Vlad is hanging out in Mab's garden right now, and why not take advantage of these henchmen that are here? So I think Ebenezer said something about Dracul and blood rights, calling him the creature, and that he's some form of scion, or he might have said that about Kincaid instead of Dracul, but he's some form of demon in mortal form somehow. But how is he born if he is starborn?
Maybe he's a demon changeling?
Which I think they would use the word scion for that, which is what you called Kincaid, if like a mortal parent and a demon parent.
Cambrian, right? So isn't Cambrian they're the half mortal, half demon? So
I don't know.
No Wikipedia. Come on now.
Why would you also make, if his son did it or he did it, the Black Court, if you're making henchmen,
can be on my bad.
You give them some significant weaknesses, some more obscure than others in terms of use, like that. But the Sun one's a big one.
Well, it depends on if they had any form of intention when they were creating them. It could have been, I need henchmen that'll last for a long time, and they didn't know the drawbacks they were going to get, or they felt that sunlight was. They
didn't know the drawback.
Or that just like kind of the way that the Murphionic field around wizards has changed over time. It used to cause boils on the skin and spoiling milk, and now it makes the electronics go crazy. It's changed. It's something so that it's
well established that the magic interest, and usually it's there's a cost, there's a balance in things. Yeah. Like, you know,
they're necromantic, right? So like, you know, it could just be one of those. The sun is a cleansing force, and
yep,
they are, you know,
Tolkien like.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it, there does seem to be like a sense of hierarchy that the White Court are the most human and in some ways the weakest, though they have more of the safety and camouflage, and the Black Court might be the strongest, but they stand out a lot more because they're living corpses. They have more of the susceptibilities to the holy water and garlic and all those things. They are the strongest, and they have more of the drawbacks, which just kind of like the way that reality seems to play fairness.
It really, I mean, I don't know. That's a take, right? Because like, it's great that their weaknesses can be weaponized and that sort of thing. But like, I don't have to go to the store to stop a White Court vampire, right? Because I have love. I am love. Whatever, right? So it's just like you could be protected from the White Court vampires just like in your skivvies. Whereas like, if you were fighting a Black Court vampire in just your underwear, you'd be in trouble. But I don't know. It's just it's a weird quibble. But I was just like,
Well, it's kind of fair, I think, because like we also see a ghost story. Felicia just walked across the barrier of Murphy's home without invitation, and she was able to do that, which a Black Court would never be able to do.
Right.
And so she has the ability, but she's also weaker in other ways, at, like being able to be stopped by love.
Sure.
So
like you can't shoot love at them, I guess, but you know, well, no,
I guess you could like shoot objects of love at them.
I guess that's true, right?
Like just gather wedding rings and have like some sort of
special. Like if you melt down, if you melt down a wedding ring into a bullet, like, you know, heirloom silver, does the magic get out? Like, or does that work? So now we've got like, you know, what was the Desperado, like Antonio Banderas Desperado, just running around killing White Court vampires because he's got like love bullets. Sorry, it's just like we got to have a bard out there hunting White Court vampires, like, you know.
Ooh, can you do a love ballad to cause them pain?
Yeah,
You truly feel who you're singing about, like if you truly feel it.
Right, like they don't go to opera very much because, you know, like it hurts. So
yeah, well, if they're performers versus if they're the ones who composed it and wrote it as a love token to someone. Like if
what I'm laughing about is because like I could see like teenage Lara having to deal with the asshole that brought a guitar to sing her a love song. Oh, and she's God. Like, you're so being eaten later because this is agony, like in multiple ways. So that's what I'm laughing about. It's like how many teenagers have been destroyed by White Court vampires because they just, I wrote you a love song. It goes, it's just your name for 25 minutes. So.
Yeah, we don't have any bards in the Dresdenverse. Not really. We need
I'm sure since all the wizards, like their magic can be expressed quite differently. There's probably someone expressing it through song, like how that's their magic language.
Yeah, that just makes the Mongolian wizards like even more dangerous, right? Because they can cast two spells at once. So
Or they just reinforce it at the same time because usually they're at least saying the same words.
Right.
Yeah, we need to ask Jim why there's no bards in the Dresdenverse.
And he'll could say, have you met Butters? That was the closest one I could think of with his polka and when he's playing the drum and everything.
That's true.
Oh, well, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Turning necromancers into bards was an interesting take, but you know, I was thinking he's more of an artificer until you reminded me about the drums. So,
yeah, but there's a difference between using a drum as a tool inside a spell versus the song itself being the spell. Like, there is a difference here.
Yeah. It was just the closest thing I could think of was like.
Oh, it's a good point, but I still think there's a hair to be split there, and I'm gonna do it.
But
This all kind of got started because we were talking about that joke post of like, if a vampire was a cop and had a warrant, would he be able to enter your home? And
I would say Black Court and Red Court, probably Black Court, no. Red Court, without any powers, maybe.
I'm still saying no, but you know, for the Dresden Files, mostly.
White Court, so. Yes.
Yeah, because we've already seen them do that without invitation, and I think the magical point of an invitation is the person who owns that home, it is their domain,
right,
is allowing someone in, and that is not superseded by a warrant.
However, to drive the wedge a little bit further, somebody else inside the home can invite them in, correct? Do they have to be a member of the household?
We haven't seen that.
Which, by extension, does extend to the law? And I think at that point, there's a difference between,
I think they have to be a part of the household.
Yeah.
Isn't there, like...
Well, we've only seen people of households that live there invite anyone in. Like, the closest thing I thought of was Daniel and Proven Guilty had accidentally let the phages in.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, he lives there.
But he lives there. That's his home. He was inviting someone in. We've not seen someone, an interloper at a house, invite someone else in that didn't belong there. And then there's even like a sense of like, if Fort Hill was at the carpenter's house, he's enough of family. He might still be able to do that. But I don't know. We haven't seen that.
Yeah. To short circuit the whole thing, it's somewhat academic because, you know, like if any of that happened, right, I'm thinking Terminator 2, where it's like, you know, are your mommy and daddy home? And then they'll be like, ah, can we come in and discuss this? And then, you know, you're using your cop costume to get in that way. But like all things being equal, I don't know that a warrant should allow it because, you know, we're talking legal versus magical, right? So like, you know, theoretically, legally, you know, at least because of what's on the books in our country and whatever, like they would be allowed to go in. But from like the metaphysical standpoint, I don't think that's sufficient.
If we look at the rules of the magic, as I understand them, at least a warrant does not have the will, the intention behind it. That someone who lives there, who is this threshold is built up around, it's someone who's never been there.
Well, a couple thoughts. I think in some ways it depends on the point of view of the person whose domain it is. If someone shows up to the carpenter house with a warrant, Michael, a very law-abiding citizen, who wants to honor the law and everything good, everything he thinks is good, is probably going to want to let them in to acquiesce to that, even if it would be detrimental, even if he doesn't actually want them in the house. Like, he has a natural inclination, I think, to allowing it, versus someone who's more ornery like Harry. If he could keep them out just by being spiteful, he will. But there's also, how does the legality of the situation affect their strength of threshold? As it's pointed out that because Harry was renting, his threshold is not nearly as good as something like the carpenters who own their home and have a family in it. He's living in a tiny little sub-basement and he doesn't technically own it. And that technicality weakens his threshold.
A loving family. And, you know, like it seemed to imply that like having good memories there strengthen the threshold as well.
Bloodline inheritance seems like that's something like Murphy's grandmother, Murphy inheriting it.
It was a loving home. It was a family home that grew up. And even though she didn't have a family in it herself as she was owning the house, it was still her home. From her family. And so she has a lot of the baggage there that gives it what it needs.
The Murphy clan has built up a wall over time.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And Harry never had that. His threshold was weak. And now it might be better with the castle and he actually has families living there. But that the way that Bob put it was that the sense of not owning it weakens the threshold. So if, say, the government sees the property somehow and you no longer technically own the property, that right. might weaken it too.
Well, no, I mean, it would probably destroy it at that point in some way, but
the connection might still help, but
yeah,
but the claim is going to be less.
Did I miss you guys bringing up Murphy's Place? Because that's another important one, because Murphy's Place has, you know, a strong threshold, but it was her grandmother's place, right?
Yeah, it's been, it's been built up by the Murphy clan, like, over time. Mm-hmm. They've sure. like, the family has built a wall, even though she doesn't have, like, anyone other than her living there.
Right.
And then they expand upon that again with the all the minor talents getting together, like hundreds of them. They expand upon her threshold as well.
Right. Yeah. Texas Blade has another interesting one there, too. So Dresden had to have somebody go get the member of the house to let him in. So that's that answers my question.
Perfectly. Right. Yeah. So. True. Yeah. I read that recently. They had to get the wife to come down and invite him in.
Right. Yeah. That's great point. Great memory.
Yeah. So. Completely forgot that little tidbit. Thank you. Yeah. And I think I remember him mentioning now, like, people had been walking in and out of that house and not being family, so he'd kind of trampled over the threshold anyway. But it was in full moon, and he needed every advantage he could get to be able to use his powers to help Malone. So he was leaning more on having the wife doing it. But if it was a child doing it, maybe that would have been enough, but as long as they were living there.
Right. Just good to know that if I have, like, my cousins over, they can't just inadvertently let something evil in the house. So, but then you get into the whole idea of, like, anyway, this doesn't relate to vampires, but, like, there's an idea that things can follow you home, which would be interesting. Mm-hmm. So, like ghost hunters worry about that a lot. So, but you're supposed to,
that, right?
Yeah, but I'm talking, like, real world for a second, you know, because there are people that believe this, but, like, when you're done going on a ghost tour, you're supposed to sit in your car and uninvite any of the spirits that might have attached to you. So if you've ever been on a ghost tour, it's a lot of fun. So there's some good places out here, but yeah.
As I don't actually believe in ghosts, I haven't. Yeah.
Look, man, you're reading fantasy. We're talking about the rules. Jim bases the rules off of real world stuff. I think it's important.
I do actually have some friends who have a friend who's, like, really into, like, the whole ghost thing. And he has that they go to churches and stuff, and he brings his EMF. He's like, look, it's doing the thing. It's like, there are ghosts here. And he's super excited about it.
I'll tell you that I'm very much a skeptic, but, you know, there was definitely a time where, you know, I had my imagination captured by it. But, like, as an adult, I've gone on these ghost hunts and I've seen shit that I can't explain. And I've had experiences that I can't explain. That doesn't always mean that it's like, oh, yeah, that's for sure ghosts. But it's like, shit, man, if they're pulling a fast one, I have no idea how, you know. So, well, hell, you know, like, I've definitely had, yeah. I mean, I've had more than a few experiences get my hackles up, you know, so. Because I was thinking we did a ghost tour in, I think it's Virginia City and like near Reno, and they've got, like, a place, and it was enough that, like, me and another dude, at least as big as I was, like, we were picking up the rear because, you know, like, we're the dudes and whatever, and we're, like, 99% sure everybody in the building was in front of us, and one of the doors slammed behind us. And that was enough. That was like, yeah, we're done here. We don't got to be here anymore. So, you know, but the other one from the ghost hunt was, they had this trick that I had never seen with flashlights, where they would unscrew the back end cap of the flashlight. So, like, if you pushed in the end of it, it would light up, and then they would just put it down in the middle of the floor and leave it alone. And then, you know, they would do, like, do two blinks for yes, one blink for no, or whatever type of thing. And I was like, nobody's touching that flashlight. I can't see how they could possibly make a mechanism there. Like, you could, yeah, sure. You know, you could argue about, you know, pressure and some other things, but I was like, yeah, I don't know what that is. So, yeah, the magnets isn't a terrible idea, but like, you know, everybody can see the flashlights. It's not like, you know, they're pulling a fast
Since
one.
It's something but... that's been set up and they're like, you know, during a tour, couldn't sure. it just be like remote controlled, some Bluetooth, you just click and there's like, it's something.
Maybe Bluetooth wasn't as ubiquitous when I went.
Radio signal then, so, something that says on off.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know.
So I'm just saying, like, you got an old enough country. There's somewhere, someplace where they're doing the same thing. You know, it'd be interesting to go experience, but yeah. So anyway, so the threshold thing, like, kind of the point was the rules are different for different things. You know, obviously the more mortal you are, you can violate the threshold. You just have to leave your power outside or most of your power outside. That works on wizards and, you know, white court at the very least. Like Fey and some other things can't breach the portal, like the threshold, unless they're invited in.
Well, but they can, those seem to they be have no able to. Ill intention.
Yeah. Like, which Fey, I mean, they're going to steal your baby, so they've always got ill intentions.
But, yeah, but you know, the brownies, for example, they'd have no intention, they were invited in. And the cat comes in and he's like, how can he do that? He's like, he's a fae. He's not supposed to. As long as he has no ill intention, he can come in. But
which honestly is bullshit because he was going to kill Dresden.
Well, he explained just that he was going to go outside and wait for them to not be paying attention when they're not behind a threshold. And he would take advantage then. Like it's quite clear from that point. I don't know, it's like, it's interesting. If he had the intention, or like if Cassith had entered the home intending to just be benevolent, but then decided to harm them, I wonder if it would force him to leave, or if it would only force him to behave in a certain way with all their other restrictions on their behavior.
Or could he just you know, like, if Cat Sith suddenly decided he was going to try and kill Harry Dresden, does he just basically turn into a kitten where it's like his claws aren't supernaturally sharp and he's just like batting Dresden like, oh, I want to hurt you so bad, you know, like.
I would imagine that his behavior would be modified, like, for Fae specifically, that he just can't do it.
Yeah.
Like Mab literally can't answer a straight question, and like, because Maeve have less power and or stuff like that, you know, they can, though it's unpleasant for them. So in this case, he just wouldn't be able to do it because he went in there under this rule that he can't.
Until he was getting insulted. Like Thomas said, like, did the evil kitty just say something snarky at me? It's like, don't give him an excuse. So it has to follow in that the rules of courtesy and politeness of, like, if Thomas is going to be insulting Cat Sith gets to defend himself. So it's probably a forceful modifier on behavior just like that. But we haven't seen a Red Court vampire try to get into any threshold, right? Unless I'm misremembering anything.
I mean, they poked around Dresden's house enough, but
they didn't try to get into it.
The closest thing I think we've seen is the Ikigawok going through a house.
Right.
And but it's not a vampire. It's a creature, like, of some sort.
Yeah, them like firebombing his house was, I thought, you know, like, the implication was they couldn't come in, but, you know, like,
arson works just as well.
Right. So.
Yeah. So it seems like the White Court are the only ones who get to have anything to do with thresholds if they're uninvited, but then they still might have a lot less ability. So if it's a White Court cop, you probably have to deal with the warrant issue. It happened to be a Red Court or Black Court vampire cop. very confusing situation, but you still might be able to keep that one person outside.
Right. Yeah. I would hedge on, like, they probably would need still to have the invitation, or they'd just be the guy outside watching the door, you know, mm-hmm. like, so, but.
I'm also under the impression that Red Court cannot come in uninvited. I don't think it's possible. They're too powerful. They're too different from a mortal, even though they were mortal once they've been changed. Let's say the unchanged Red Court vampires and White Court vampires, they're probably on a similar operating level, right? Potentially. Maybe not, because, like, I did just read that horrid scene and Susan is stronger and mm-hmm. stuff within Dresden's home, but she has been invited before, so I guess that's right. not a void in that regard, so I don't know.
Well, and yeah, was she invited this time, you know?
Pretty much, just by, like, a standing invitation. Obviously, he still wants her there. Like, the sense of invitation was never revoked. Physically, I guess we haven't seen a stat chart of the difference between a White Court and a Red Court vampire.
Oh, White Court vampire stronger in terms of stats, I think. I just think they're similarly limited, kind of like in that regard, with thresholds and choices, right? They both have full autonomy. They can decide to do things as they see fit. White Court's a little more politically restricted, I guess. But, I mean, it's not like they are fey restricted, for example, who are, like, they're above them in terms of restriction, I would say. They can choose to not become a White Court vampire. When they are White Court vampires, they can choose to not give in to the hunger, until they're driven mad with hunger, I guess.
Right. So that's something that I get. I guess we don't know as much about the Black Court, but, like, the sense of crazed feeding will happen to both White Court and Red Court. As Harry was pointing out, that Kukul Khan was going a bit batty and becoming weirdly addicted to the blood as it happens as they get into crazier old age, apparently. But. So, slight pivot to this, still talking about perhaps the White Court vampires, as we've perennially been talking about this wedding that's going to be a disaster. It's going to be so much fun to watch. Someone had left a comment about what would happen when Harry and Laura actually get married, the implication that the kiss that seals it would protect Laura from Harry's love protection and nullify it in a way to allow for consummation. And I think this was drawing from, though I needed to go back and reread it, and I apologize that I didn't, the short story of Billy and George's wedding, in which they emphasized how important it was that that kiss would have been to seal it. Because if Georgia was swapped out with Jenny Greenteeth, then Billy would have been bound to her significantly forever in a way that he should have been bound to Georgia.
I think she's just burst into flames personally. So
you think that any sense of magical binding of a kiss at the wedding would still burn Laura?
Depending on where, how, and granted, like, a bunch of smarter people who also know, you know, the rules are going to be planning said wedding, but it, like, can she get married in a chapel? Like, I'm just saying, we're putting the cart before the horse a little bit. Like, is she even going to be able to make it to the wedding if they're doing, like, a full-on, like, white wedding, or do they go get hitched in Vegas, which is probably better odds that she doesn't burst into flame, you know, Vegas or Reno or a dozen other places. But like, you know, yeah, because the symbolism is there, right? And, like, she got burned by a wedding ring, she still got the scar from that. So from that, you know, like,
considering what else they can heal, like, from the, against the damage is, I think, always, like, maybe it's like, how do you heal from pretty much anything, but it will leave a scar when it's true love, but it will still mostly heal.
Magic. Yeah, thank you. You're right there, man. Good job. Yeah, I mean, that's it. We don't know or make the rules, right? So that's the first thing. But like, and I mean, theoretically, like, she could get burned well before that point. You know, as near as we can tell, it seems that, you know, to be a grown up and use the appropriate word, boinking, has more to do with, you know, adding that protection than anything else, right? So like, Harry has been protected a number of times or had it broken a number of times. Thomas has had it broken and removed sometimes a couple of times a night. Lucky bastard. But no, I'm just kidding. Sorry. We're talking about White Court. It's always going to get childish around here. But yeah, so it's like, you know, theoretically, hell, could she be burned by Harry already? And I'm not even talking the Murphy thing. If, in my estimation, she's fallen for him. But I guess he has to want it.
Yeah,
back,
it has to go both ways.
Yeah, like.
So if Murphy's protection is removed, then, and if Lara has fallen for him, then he would need to feel the same in return for her to be burned by him again.
Right. And yeah, so I guess, like, I mean, I do kind of straight up think she's going to have a problem if this all becomes for love, right? I think the out there is whether or not Dresden finds it back. But if, like, I mean, if we want to just take it 1,000 feet up and just say, could a White Court vampire marry somebody, like full on love them, holding hands, kissing, just the whole love thing, you know, then how would that work? And
unlikely that White Court vampires get married in general. Lara made a reference to her married name being Romani briefly, but there's a strong implication that it was some form of political or advantageous marriage and not for love.
She's a Black Widow. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. There's just no chance that she didn't marry him for money and power and then off him at some point, you know,
like, in a way that he probably very enjoyed, but.
Well, that too, but.
But if this type of true love protection would be fine in terms of marriage, why didn't Thomas ever marry Justine?
Yeah, I mean, is it something that they don't know? I guess that's what you're saying, right? Is like, if they knew it was going to protect him from her,
yeah,
why didn't they get married? But yeah,
and it's just
antithetical to the White Court, literally, right? It's like, you know, why don't you make your spoons out of pure sodium? Mostly because they explode. Even if it would protect me from chlorine or something else. Sorry, that's too nerdy. But, you know, like, just maybe the idea doesn't even pop into his head that it would be anything but. And, like, I mean, somewhere in history, somebody's had to have tried it for real, right? But, like, I just think even if she doesn't, like, burst into flames, which is, of course, dramatic and just funny to think about, like, maybe it kills her demon or, you know, puts the whammy on it in some way, you know, where it's going to put her up in the ICU figuratively, if not literally, where, you know, I don't know. I'm not a fan of it. It kind of puts a dampen on my whole, like, she's caught feelings thing. And, you know, oh yeah, I guess they don't get to ride off into the sunset because I know they don't, but I can dream until we get the book, you know, but I don't think she's going to make it that far to where we're going to get an answer. So
you're thinking that she's going to die tragically before the wedding even happens?
Well, that, or, you know, like I said, there's dozens of different ways she could be like, oh, well, this was a mistake before they even get to the wedding kiss, right? Like I'm talking about if she caught feelings and she grabs his toothbrush, you know, or whatever, right? Like, I just, it, there are so many different things like, oh, they're going to go to St. Mary of the Angels. How's that going to work out? Like, where are they even going to hold this wedding? Right. Like, I guess they could do it on the Wraith Estate. They've got all that forest and
they could do it on the Wraith Estate. They could do it at Dresden's castle. There's a question of where are they going to live after the wedding?
Yeah, right.
Or are they going to have those old time noble marriages that's like, we're just going to live separately and see each other like three times a year?
Well, you know, she's going to take people on the side too, right? Like literally has to. So
yeah, she has to.
Yeah. Like, look, Dresden, it's not a question about love. I'm starving, man. Like it's literal sustenance. So yeah, I don't think it's actually going to happen, but you know, I stand by currently my theory that she's caught feelings and then obviously something's going to happen. Like, I don't think he's going to get a happy ending, you know, not like that anyway, you know? Never. So like, I'm still curious about, you know, whether or not he gets to be old man Dresden at the end and he's going to be the Merlin or some badass wizard one way or another. But one of the things that's been giving me pause lately, because I started reading Codex Alera, was that somebody brought up the fact that like Tavi is supposed to be the exact opposite of Dresden. Which, if you take that literally, Tavi started with no powers and eventually became this total badass. And Dresden started with some badass powers. I don't know if he's going to make it, you know? So
like, I don't remember ever hearing that. They're not very different.
It's even worded Jim, but I can. Yeah.
They're not very different.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, he's got the same, you know, Dresden lethal nobility, like got to save people types of stuff so far, but.
There's what more I remember hearing was that there's a lot of similarities between Tavi and Dresden, especially even physically. And is there perhaps a reason for it? Are they like related to each other in some way? And Jim said, how dare you accuse me of such things? So it's, gotcha. I don't think they're supposed to be opposites of each other.
Well, we got our next topic then. So we can dig into the character analysis of that. I've read two books out of six. We're good. You know, I totally understand everything about this character and I'm ready for this. But but no, I think that's a funny quote too, though, actually. So
Yeah, this marriage is going to be weird and dramatic because just trying to go back to this topic of what is going to happen with vampires. There was the suggestion that marriage happens in Arctis Tor, the whole wedding thing. I don't think so. I think it's going to have to happen in Chicago because it's their base of power, both of them. And it needs to be public and announced to everyone that this is an alliance to be feared. That's the purpose that Lara was trying to go for, and that's what Mav is doing. Like, they're making an alliance, and like, you will know that by messing with one person, you're messing with the other. And so putting it in Arctis Tor, unless Mav opens it up to everyone, not going to happen. Because the mortals also need to know, especially since Harry's becoming the Wizard of Chicago. It's his domain, and so he needs to be there and protect it and celebrate it.
Can't help but wonder ultimately what is the real Lara Wraith? Is she this more vulnerable person that we've gotten to see? Is she the badass? Is she that spiteful woman who said, I will kill you with kindness? Is she all of them? She is, you know, the White Court, extremely deceitful, cat paws, everything. Like, it's very hard to No.
Okay. I'm going to put my psychologizer title to use here. She's all of them in different forms. They are all strengths and different weaknesses of her. She can use the vulnerability that she has to be a better actor, for example, of like wanting to have someone convinced that she's vulnerable and to help them fall for her. Using her real vulnerability, it makes it easier. But she also knows how much of a weapon that can be to use that against them, of we'll say, making someone do something stupid and try to protect her and White Knight for in weird ways that's just going to play to her advantage and not to theirs. It is just as much of a weapon as it is her true vulnerability. And she can be that spiteful person of how dare you take things away from me, because she's a couple hundred years old living in the White Court. She understands exactly how dangerous everything can be in such subtle ways of their deceitful cat's pawing nature that she's paranoid. The only way that you survive too much in this world is paranoia. It's the best quality that they can have. So she's all of them.
Yeah, sure. That's a fair answer. Just think there's might be, I mean, it's got to be drama, right?
Oh yeah.
So
there, we will probably see a true vulnerability of her.
They get perfect wedding, doves in the air, flowers that don't burn her for some reason, just all of it. So. It's a fantasy book. It's my fantasy until it's written on paper. It's not, I mean, it's not really, but like, I don't mind people being happy. Like, that's okay.
It's people just boring in terms of a book series. Like, happy people just being happy. It's like, then what's the point? Give them misery. It's way more interesting.
Because he gets a badass battle companion that'll age with him, which is why we know it's not going to happen. So, yeah, it broke it up into like four quotes, but.
Tabby's supposed to be the polar opposite of Dresden, not powerful, but deucedly clever, not gifted above and beyond them, but below them. Okay, that's fair.
Just so we're clear, Tabby would have asked what a Starborn was in like book three. So, you know, there's a Tabby reason why there's only six books, because that's all he needed to fix it. Whereas Dresden's like struggle bus through 20.
Yeah, that's fair. That's the thing I enjoyed most about Tabby is that he had no power. He was only surviving by being clever, which Harry is not.
Right.
Yeah. Fair enough. That's the type of polar opposite, sure. Yeah. Oh, I guess we got to do a read of Codex, sorry, because it's going to start bleeding in no matter what. But
I mean, right now it's okay. We're not in a hurry because my next bleed in is I'm in the middle of reading Heir to the Empire. So I'm reading at least that first book. And then depending on if I can get, you know, second and third and stuff, like Ahsoka is coming and it looks like they're going to try and merge her character in with Thrawn for some reason. So I got to know how it was supposed to be so I can be mad when I'm watching it on TV. You know, so because also like I read the introduction from Timothy Zahn and he freaking got it, which is why the books did as well as they were, because he was like, if I'm going to write these characters, they have to be the same characters. You have to hear them in their own voices. And everybody else is like, that's stupid. Why don't we just slap Star Trek and Picard on the title and we'll call it good? And that's stupid. Why don't we just like, we'll redo the, he literally said, I don't want to do what George Lucas did, but bigger. Yeah. I was like, oh man, that was a 20-year-old shot at JJ Abrams. If I've ever seen one, he's like, yeah. I loaded that bullet a long time ago, but yeah, that's yeah. Anyway. So it's been, you know, enjoyable to actually be reading it. And yeah, so I'm on a Codex Alera break for a minute, but
I'll give me time to reread and catch up as I got pulled into something else. And it's been 10 years since I read those books.
Yeah, I got a 2-book head start, which for me probably doesn't count for anything because you actually read, you know, whereas I'm just like, I like books sometimes. I like the idea of books.
I started this 2 days ago. I'm halfway through it and I've only been reading like parts of the days and I just threw my bookmark out of the book.
Great. And it was metal, so it's like thwong in the wall. So
I've been looking if I could like get some physical books that I actually would want to read, like the hardcover or just like, can you hold yours up again?
You want her to fling the bookmark again?
Yeah, I want the floppy, you know, the floppy paperbacks. I want those
soft cover.
No, like
like the bigger ones that are floppier.
Yeah, I have some over here, but then
yeah. Anyway, whatever. Nerds. Yeah.
books.
There's so much nicer to read than those that are like too tightly wound. Oh, this one's floppy actually. Like this.
Great. Right.
Is that what they're called?
Automating the boring stuff with Python?
Yes.
Yeah. P.S. Fantastic book if you need to get into Python, but you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we don't really have them here in Europe. It's usually from American publications that are imported. So it's pretty rare to be able to get those kind of, and they're so much better to read them.
I'm just shocked you spent real money on it, since he's got like a website, gives shit away all the time.
Yeah, I have the course too on Udemy that he gave away for free. I got this one for like 50 kroner, which is $5.
Oh, okay.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It sounded like a lot.
Yeah, I picked it up in a Humble Bundle. Like, that's how I got introduced. And then, like, he's active on the Python subreddits, you know? So it was like, every now and again, he's like, oh, by the way, we put an update out there. We're doing a new course or whatever, you know? So it's crazy. But yeah, that book is what finally broke through for me, because it was like programming shouldn't be this hard. I don't understand. And it was like, hey, just shut up and write code. And I'm like, fine. And then things started working. And, you know, I was like, oh, I could do this.
Programming is 100% learning by doing and building. Like, it's like being a craftsman. You gotta do it.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that's vampires.
Well, some of it. Vampires.
What language would they code in? Just kidding. So
Etruscan. Ancient Latin. Proto-Indo-European.
Do we have a topic for next week? Did we decide? Yeah.
No.
Because you guys all of a sudden we're like, oh, I don't know if we can watch Arnold movies. And
no, we
have to quibble about the Flair in 10 years and all these excuses.
To quibble about the list of the Arnold movies.
Oh, is that what we're going to do? We'll have an hour long argument on which 5 movies we're going to watch.
Maybe.
Oh, Jesus. Like, how? What? I'm not fighting an unarmed child. Like, you're going to have to go watch his entire filmography, and then you can come argue with me about which movies we're going to watch. So
you chose 5 movies, and Kindergarten Cop wasn't on there.
The dice chose 5 movies.
You made executive decisions to remove some things. You admitted to it.
That's true, because if I didn't know what the fuck it was, it didn't need to be on the list. So, like, you know. Yeah, like one of them was literally like some like 1980s some nonsense movie that I was like, no, we're not putting this in there. Like we're not putting this in there over Conan, that's for goddamn sure. Or
almost anything over Conan.
Yeah.
It has like one good line.
It's got like 3, and it's got like Vader with the hair, and you know,
not
like,
a plus.
Yeah.
Vader with the hair is not a plus.
What? He's a great bad guy. So.
Sure. Yes. Yes. I know better than to argue too much with Justin.
Finally.
Or at least it has to be something I really care about. Conan being one of them.
Yeah. We both know what's good in life, and that's what's important. So.
No, well, what's good in life is the lamentation of the women. The one good line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll figure out plans at some point, because it sounds like we have homework to do in some direction. So
I did the homework. If you guys would just copy it, we'd be done. But no, you're like, ooh, what if we reinvent the wheel? So
yeah, that's I do that too many times. But this was something about vampires, and we'll see what we do in 2 weeks. We have no fucking clue. Just by the way, give us a topic, and we'll talk about it.